All right, well, the next line that we would be discussing goes into the five directions, or six directions, and but instead, let's go back over very clearly what he's talking about here. You'll notice that the Buddha says that you should not be taking up a spiritual practice because it makes sense. Which is a weird thing to say, but that's what he says. So on Saturday morning when you get the knock on your door and the guy at the door says, "Hey, have you ever read this new Toro snowblower manual that will make your winters absolutely fantastic?" And you say, "But I live in San Diego, there's no snow." But they still were like, "Well, but you got to read this, otherwise you're going to be snowed in and miserable," right? So that everything in that manual could make a lot of sense, but it makes no sense to have that in San Diego because I've never seen snow there ever. Not even close. So that's great that the manual itself makes sense to itself, because it says, you know, if it's not starting up, you need to prime it, you know, set the choke, and then because it doesn't have an electric starter, you're going to pull this cord, and you know, it's okay, great. All of that stuff in the manual makes sense, but it doesn't in the environment. So Buddha says, just because it makes sense doesn't mean that you're supposed to follow it. Now, for those of you, well, Rob's not here, but for those that are from Minnesota, Toro is a great name because it's made here. So everybody loves Toro. But the Buddha says, you can't follow Toro just because the name and the reputation of Toro. Don't follow a teacher just because he's got great titles and you know, he's quote-unquote worthy of respect, and you're just going to follow him because you heard he's great. So that it makes no sense. So you can't do that. Because again, in San Diego, Toro would mean nothing in the terms of snowblowers. We don't care how good a Toro snowblower is because we will never use one. So just because a teacher has fantastic titles doesn't mean anything. For those of us in the West, if they can't speak English, they won't be useful. It doesn't matter how great they are. If you cannot communicate to them clearly without having to say, do you know what I mean? Do you understand what I'm saying? And then they go, "Oh, yeah," and they have no idea what you're saying. It is not going to work, no matter how respectful the guy is. Lost in translation is real. Even if they can speak English, it doesn't mean that they comprehend what you're saying. For example, I went to see the Dalai Lama many years ago, and they have like this open mic period where people can talk to him and so forth. And this 8-year-old boy goes up and he says, you know, "I want to tell a joke to the Dalai Lama." And they're, okay, this will be great. And he tells a joke about a Buddhist ordering a pie. Pizza pie, for all you non-Italians, right? So it goes to a pizza parlor, if you guys still call them that. I don't know what you... He's buying a pizza pie, all right? So he goes in, and the guy at the counter, he sees this Buddhist monk or whatever he is, and he says, so what kind of pie would you like? And the Buddhist says, one with everything. And the audience all laughs, and the Dalai Lama's like waiting to hear a joke. And so the translator leans over and starts talking to him. And while he's talking to, they're going back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And Dalai Lama keeps doing this, like. And then after a few moments, you know, a guy comes up to the little boy and he goes, that's really good. You know, go back to your seat. And that's it, because he didn't get it. Because he can't understand the nuances of our language. And culture. And culture, you know. Because, see, now if the kid was speaking in Tibetan, and you, there wouldn't be a play on words. Because the phrase "one with everything," Tathagata Garba, would not make any sense in reference to what kind of pie you would want. Because "one with everything," as in a collection of stuff, is an entirely different phrase than the phrase that they would use for Tathagata Garba. It would be kind of like saying this kid walks in, or this monk walks into a pie shop, and they say, what kind of pie do you want? And he says, enlightenment. We'd be like, huh? It's not a joke to us. So, you have to understand, even in the Buddha's day, in India, there were hundreds of dialects. India is not a country of one language. Matter of fact, they have, I think, if I'm not mistaken, 7 national languages.
Over 40 dialects.
Yeah, over 40 dialects, but they have 7 national languages. Like United States, we have 1. They keep trying to make more, but they refuse. You know, it's Espanol would be really great. I know at one time they... Like, you know, oh, we want this dialect. And the government was like, hell no. So that's it. We have American English, and that's the only official language in the whole country. In India, they have 7 today with over 40 different dialects of it. In the Buddha's day, it would have been every village had its own dialect. They didn't walk around speaking Sanskrit. In fact, nobody spoke Sanskrit. They all spoke Pali, or they spoke all these different vernacular languages. And only the learned knew anything about Sanskrit. So Buddha did not speak Sanskrit when he spoke Sutra. Ever. Unless he did a verse, and then, or, you know, sometimes they say, and then the Buddha spoke in verse. Then he goes into the colloquial, you know, Sanskrit, but the rest of the time, all of his sutra, everything he ever said was said in Pali, because that was his vernacular language. That was his, yo, what's up, man, language. He didn't use Latin, right? That would be us today, if we wanted to, like, do something really, like we do in the medical world. When we want to be really scientific, we speak Latin. But he wouldn't do that. Later, they put it in Sanskrit, so all scholars everywhere would be able to understand the meaning of what he was saying. But that's not how he talked. So he's saying that same thing. Just because his teacher has a great reputation doesn't mean that you follow him. Especially if you can't communicate with the guy or the woman. It's just, what's the point of that? A teacher is a person who is spiritually responsible for your development. I mean, you have to put in the effort, but they have to guide it. If you cannot communicate the little nuances of your personality defects and personality accomplishments, you're not going to get anywhere with that teacher. And he says, so that really doesn't matter. And you certainly should never take up a spiritual practice because that practice is in line with your own beliefs. That's a massive mistake. Huge. That is a cult of your ego. And becomes a corporate cult of ego. He says you shouldn't do it just because it sounds likely. Don't do it out of logic or because the way that they explain stuff makes sense. I mean, none of that. So when the guy knocks on the door on Saturday morning and he says, hey, have you read this Toro snowblower manual? If you have a conversation with them, maybe that person is very, very intelligent and knows this manual inside and out. To the point where he's like, you know, you can add these pneumatic tires and they're only 35 pounds per square inch of pressure for this type of pneumatic tire. And if you have to change out these tires, you can change it. And the guy's like all over it, right? Tells you how to gauge and engage the actual blades and, while the motor's running and how to change the different gears depending on how deep the snow is. And the guy may be very, very knowledgeable. And he may be like, and all your neighbors are going to have one. And it's at a really low price right now because it's Black Friday week. And he's great at selling you this manual. It sounds highly plausible, highly likely. It makes a lot of sense. But that's not a reason to follow it. If he tells you, look, if you do not buy this Toro snowblower, this is what's going to happen to you. You're going to freeze to death. You're going to be trapped in your house in snow, and we will abandon you, and you will freeze to death and starve to death because you won't be able to get out and walk down your sidewalk. And the whole time you're like, but I live in Mission Valley. Christmas Day is 85 degrees. And when winter comes, which is late April, it gets down to like 59 and rains a little bit. will this like blow sand off my driveway when I bring my car back from the beach? And then the guy says, that's blasphemous! You will freeze in your house! Right? Because that's how they're going to sell you it. That, right there, is what the Buddha says is whether you should follow or not follow. Is it teaching a punishment and a hatred? If you reject the Toro motor, are you now an enemy of the Toro dealership? Are you now somebody that they think is a hedonistic fool who's going to freeze to death in their wonderful San Diego house that maybe you don't live in Mission Valley, but you live right above it in, like, I don't know, Normal Heights, which is up on a mesa? In the desert?
Snow desert.
Yeah. Well, if you go real high desert, then you get snow. But even then, it's not real snow. It's never more than 2 inches. Unless you go into the mountains, and then there's the ski resorts. But those people up there are not going to use Toro. Why not? Because San Diego or Southern California has Craftsmen. Woo! See, they got their own brand. Now, there might be a pocket of Toro users over there somewhere. But all of the main dealerships are going to be like, this other brand. So, you judge whether the teachings create hatred, whether they're churning out people that are preoccupied with follow us or be worthless scrap for the fire, or in this case, the snow. Are they teaching some form of suffering? Like just roundly rejecting you? And do they teach you, if you join and buy a Toro, do they teach you to hate everyone that doesn't own a Toro? That's what the Buddha says to look for. And if there is any of this hostility and negativity to humankind or to yourself, rightly so, reject it. Rightly so, reject it. That includes the Toro dealership that hates the other Toro dealership because they don't have the same make and model. Oh no, see, we only use the 33A or 3300A. Those people that use the 960, well, that's crap. Why? It's still Toro. No, see, because our dealership told us the 3300A is the only model that should be used because that's the authentic Toro model. How many of us have heard that? I mean, it's fortunate for you guys in the Missouri because there's not any Buddhists in Missouri. I mean, it's almost none. And that's great. But when you come from a place like California where everything is either Buddhist or Hindu or a mix of Buddhist and Hindu, or it's some other religion that's Buddhist and Hindu and some smattering of other religions, they all hate each other. I mean, when I first became Buddhist, I thought, woo, you know, I got this New Jersey that says, you know, and my number is on it. I was number 10965428. And because there's a lot of Buddhists, you don't get low numbers there. Like in the Missouri, it's tough to even get double digits. You know, you're always like, number 8, woo! You know, sometimes they put a 0 in front of it to make it look bigger. 08, yeah! But out in California, you know, you see people wandering around with like 10489926, and you're like, wow, man, that's like, because you know, everybody's Buddhist. So I thought, because I got the jersey, I can celebrate with everybody that has a jersey on. I mean, that's what I thought. Well, then I saw a guy. Instead of having a rainbow striped jersey, he had an all green one. Just solid green. And his number was like 485. And I was like, wow, this guy's been around for a long time. He's got a green jersey. You know, this guy's cool. So I went over to him and I went, hey, I'm Buddhist too. And he goes, no, you're not. Your teacher is a POS. That's not Buddhism. Only my green jersey teachers are Buddhist. And I went, whoa, I didn't say that other religion that hates all the other different denominations. I said Buddhist. And he said, screw you and your jersey. Unless, of course, you want to come over to my teacher. But if you don't, you suck. That's what he did. And so what I did, because I was a young Buddhist, is I acted like I was 4 and started crying and ran back to my own temple. And I found my teacher and I said, he was making fun of me because I didn't have a green jersey on. And my teacher said, well, yeah, see, you're going to find all these different jerseys. And the ones that act like that are not Buddhist. Their jersey says that they are, but they are not. And their teacher is highly questionable if their students behave like this. Because if their students, if the teacher allows the students to act like that, then the teacher is not an authentic teacher. So says the founder of this religion. You guys just read it. Are they teaching hatred? Are they teaching to be exclusive? Are they teaching harm? I mean, then he goes as far as, and this is crazy. I mean, the Buddha goes as far as saying they go around killing and harming sentient beings. Well, let's think about that, because you get that knock on your door on Saturday morning from the Toro dealership, and they're telling you all these great things about Toro. Yet at the same time, places that try to do public good, I don't want to get all political here, so I don't want to name names, like Planned Parenthood, have to have security because these same freaking religions who are trying to, they say, help people be happy and have salvation are bombing and killing people. What the hell kind of religion is that? What love is in blowing up a building full of people? I mean, I hope there's no children around at all, but what the fuck is that? Seriously? And you expect me to join that? Yes, the founder of that religion is great. He's absolutely fantastic. I think he's a manifestation of one of my personal teachers. I think his teachings are brilliant. But if that's what his students are going to do, according to this sutra, I am not following it. Because that is absurd. Because if you follow it, they teach you hate. You have enough of that with your own petty tyrant ego on a daily basis. And now you're going to join a collective community of it? You become sick. So just because it makes sense, you can't follow that. You have to look at what is actually happening. It doesn't matter if they have great excuses of why. Look, you can wish away, you can try to come up with all the brilliant schemes and reasons of why the Holy Inquisition was a great freaking idea to torture and murder thousands of people all over Europe. But if they can sell that, then why the hell isn't the whole genocide of everything else okay? If it's all right for an institution to do that and then make excuses of why it was okay, or even if they say, well, we're sorry, we apologize, but still keep doing it, still keep spreading hate. Maybe they don't kill anymore, but they certainly tell people and they incite them to do horrific things, to reject people, to punish them socially, economically, and everything else if they're not following you, then the Holocaust should be also okay. And that is sick. This is exactly what the Buddha is talking about. Your spiritual training is supposed to make you entirely opposite of all of that. And when you see students that are hostile, reject the whole thing. I don't care if it's a Dalai Lama. I don't care what kind of teacher, what kind of great, huge freaking titles he has. It's crap. So says Shakyamuni Buddha. If they are warm and inviting and they say, well, this is what we do, we notice you do something different, and that's really cool. Now you can hug each other. Now it's great. Now it's fantastic. And if you want to join that, certainly join it. Every true Dharma, whether it's Hinduism, Buddhist, or whatever it is, every true Dharma has one purpose only. And that teacher should be promoting one purpose only, and every one of their students should be walking around emulating one purpose only. And that is the end of suffering. Not, I'm going to end mine, but continue to dump some on you. That is not the end of suffering. That is anti-four immeasurables. That is anti-enlightenment. That is anti-auspicious wish. It is anti-Shakyamuni Buddha. So when you look around and you think, well, maybe I should go over there because they have more people. Maybe I should go over here because they do something in a foreign language and it just sounds better than what they're doing over where I'm at. Because this English stuff sucks. I prefer to go somewhere that I can't understand anything and I'll get my enlightenment like that. Right? A lot of people have this idea. They dress way better over there. Or over here, they don't have a dress code, so I'm going to go over there. They're all in bikinis, and they just hang out at the beach every day. They meet right underneath the pier down in Ocean Beach for their weekly meditation, so I'm going to join that group. And they don't have to wear robes, because as soon as they're done meditating, they run out into the water and they play. So they must be way better than this group freezing their asses off in Minnesota. I have a couple students that's what they would prefer to do. The other cab group that hangs out in the beach. And then the other week that they're not at the beach, they go to Balboa Park and sit under a big sacred tree. Why? Because it doesn't snow. Yeah, certainly my students here that followed me up here would much rather
take you down.
Go there. Yeah, and take me back there so I can be just as miserable as I was when I lived there. Which means I'm going to run off to a monastery if they drag me there, because that's what I did being a native of San Diego. So look, be very clear-minded of what this path is about, and look at all of the examples of how this stuff is being presented. The Anguttara Sutra, this section of it, because it's not the whole sutra, it's actually a massive sutra, but this section of it with the Kalamas is absolutely brilliant. You see, you're not rejecting their religions. You're not telling them that they're crazy. You're not telling them that you don't believe in it, because it has nothing to do with what you believe, because until you're enlightened, your believing is just ridiculous in itself. It's kind of like an informed opinion, said tongue-in-cheek. Like, San Diego must be so much better Yeah, that's an informed opinion. Because if you haven't gone and sat meditation in the sand under the pier, I prefer my garage. Because I'm not a fan of having sand blown in my face while I'm trying to sit. Or some kid running across your blanket, or, you know, somebody's bare ass because they're wearing a G-string swimsuit plopping down in front of you. That's not my form of meditation in spiritual practice. So when they say, oh no, it is better, that's what I would call an informed opinion. Tongue-in-cheek. Whatever that phrase means, because I hope I'm using that phrase right, because I don't know what that phrase means. That's what you want to do. Are they promoting peace and happiness across everything or not? I had somebody ask one time, not to me, but I was in the presence of one of my teachers when somebody asked, oh, so you don't believe that there's actually true evil in the world? And my teacher's immediate response was, the only true evil in the world is the person that spreads hate and violence. And it's not because their soul is innately evil. It is because they have turned against their actual true nature. That's evil. And then the person said, oh, so you would reject that? And my teacher said, absolutely not. Those are the people that fill all of our seats in our temples. Yeah, you're here because you're pure evil. And you've recognized it, and you don't want to be anymore. Because it's wearing you out. And it's not that you're actually evil. It's just that your delusion caused by your ego has made you do things that don't really work out well. And you want to try something else. You want something different. And my teacher said, for those that don't need to be woken up, we prefer that they don't come to service. Not that they're not welcome. It's just, it's not really going to do much for them. But if they want to, that's fine. We just really don't care. And then this guy went on and pressed him again and said, so if I just quit? And my teacher said, that's fine. And he said, well, why would you say that's fine? Don't you want to, like, build up your community? And my teacher said, students come and go like the wind. They blow in with their fantastic fragrance and all of their commotion, and they come in and they stir stuff up. And then after a certain amount of time, they blow away to who knows where. And they just vanish without a trace. Now, that, upon hearing that, immediately made me take refuge in that teacher. That was the moment that I became a devotee of that guru. I waited for him to go sit down in his throne, and then I went up to him, and I took my belt, because it's the only thing I had, and I got down on one knee, and I held it up, and I said, please be compassionate towards me, and allow me to become your devotee. Because that teacher at that moment fulfilled the requirements of the Anguttara Nikaya Sutra.